Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio, talk show host, Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now, putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show. 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of 12, as we are high at Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us so that we can talk to all of you on the 50,000 powerful watts of sound. And it is NJDiet.com who sponsors our studio here high atop 7th Avenue. And that song coming in, Put Me in Coach, could easily, Ebony K. Williams, have been my theme song last night.
I heard you were out there showing out, Curtis. That's what I heard.
Well, as you know, we have been promoting the fact that both Sid Rosenberg and yours truly would be out at the Cyclone Stadium, Brooklyn Cyclone Stadium, which is MCU Park. And that we would be throwing out the first pitch last night, which was also on Jewish night.
Is it officially called that?
Yeah, it was officially called Jewish night. So Gentiles didn't have a chance. So the Jews were the
stands. It's always stacked against you, huh, Curtis?
Oh, yeah, totally stacked against me. But I knew that going down there after finishing the drive home at 5. Problem was when I jumped on the Q train at Herald Square, the mother of all colitis and ileitis attacks hit me. So much so that on the way out there, I was crying from the pain. People thought I had been stabbed or shot. You know, they were coming to my beck and call.
Shot again.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was, like, in such pain. And I was, like, just on the verge of deciding to check out and go to a nearby hospital. But I realized by the time I got to Coney Island, that hospital would be Coney Island Hospital. There's no way I'm going to Coney Island Hospital. I would rather you, Ebony K. Williams, do triage on me in the middle of the street, having no medical skills.
Dang. Why so much shade to Coney Island Hospital?
Well, not just Coney Island. It could be Woodkill Hospital, better known as Woodhull Hospital in Bushwick. It could be Kings County Hospital. It could be Jacoby Hospital.
So you're a little bougie. So if it's not like Lenox Hill, if it's not like, you know, the pristine. Well, how about Harlem Hospital? Would you go to Harlem Hospital?
No, hell no.
They saved Dr. Martin Luther the King.
Oh, please. Yeah, they got stabbed.
Yeah, and they saved Dr.
There.
Martin Luther the King. That's not good enough for you.
I am telling you, if I got shot, take the bullets out in the middle of the street. Do not take me to Harlem Hospital.
What?
There are about 12 hospitals. I will tell people, do not take me there. I'd rather die right here in the streets, because you'll probably die in the intake unit or the ER unit of these hospitals.
I mean, dang.
So I sucked it up, and I made it there. And I originally, my plans were, Ebony, I wanted to score the trifecta, the troika, the trinity of visits. Because A, number one, right as you get out at Coney Island Stillwell Avenue out of the train station, you heard the melodies of the Temptations warming up for their concert. So I wanted to hit the Temptations. And then a block away from MCU Stadium, the mayor, your mayor, not mine, Comrade Bill de Blasio, I didn't vote for him, was having a town hall meeting. So I wanted to go in there and obviously disrupt it and bum rush it.
You're such a disruptor.
And then run over to MCU Park and join Sid Rosenberg in throwing out the first pitch. So naturally, who gets to throw out the first pitch first? Not the Gentile. It's Jewish night. So the rabbinical son, the Booker boy, Sid Rosenberg.
My boy Sid.
Who went to Baruch College with a number two pencil, like a lot of Jews, to become an accountant. Grew up in Midwood, Brooklyn, a soft neighborhood. So they let him throw the ball out first. He did a very good job.
Well, you know, of course he did, because he is the originator. People think it was Mike the Situation on Jersey Shore. No, it's actually Sid who originated Jim Tan Laundry, yes. GTL.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. He's orange. He glows in the dark from the man tan.
He's
that he
almost
has.
Darker than me.
But he was weak in the fact he didn't go to the mound. He didn't pitch from the mound. he pitched from the lip of the mound, which is where the girlies, like yourself, would throw the ball from.
The girlies.
Yeah, girlies, like yourself, Ebony K. Williams. You know, it's like the female tee in golf and the male tee. The female tee is always pushed up. You don't have to hit the ball as far as the males. Mm-hmm. So what did Sid opt for? The girly throw from the lip of the mound. Mm-hmm. Whereas I, the man's man, went right to the mound. You're there.
Such an alpha man you are, Curtis.
I did a triple.
Where's your jacket, by the way?
I don't have the jacket on because I had to go to the doctor's today.
You went to Harlem Hospital today?
No, not Harlem Hospital. Hell no.
Dang, you're shading the heck out of my neighborhood hospital.
Better yet, I'd rather have the Mongolooch give me CPR on 145th Street outside of Harlem Hospital than me be wheeled inside of Harlem Hospital. But anyway, so I throw my first pitch, and it's on a one bounce to the plate. So all the Jews in the crowd, they boo me. All the Jews. The deck was stacked against me. These Orthodox Jews, observant Jews, Hasidim Jews. They're all there. They're watching the game. They're cheering on their bucha boy, you know, their rabbinical student there, Sid Rosenberg. The deck was stacked against me. I throw the pitch on one bounce throw, not my best endeavor ever. And then as soon as I get towards the dugout, I collapse from the colitis and ileitis. And naturally, if there's one thing that Jews know more about Gentiles, it's about stomach issues. Because they're always complaining, oh, my bowels, my intestines, my goiter. I ask them, where's the goiter? I can't find my solar plexus. How the hell am I going to find my goiter? Mm. So that was my night in Coney Island, where I was stretched out on a table.
I sent a tweet out. Did you hear about the tweet I sent?
No, I was like stung God.
Yeah, I heard you were not in good shape. Well, Sid sent out the video and the picture, and I said, it was you two. I said, two of my absolute favorite guys, but shh, don't tell Curtis Lee. You know, because I don't want you to know that I have affections for you. But I was really, really happy to see you guys out there. It was nice.
Anyway, there was another baseball game that took prominence to our minor league game of the Mets affiliate, the Brooklyn Cyclones. And that was the Yankee game in Detroit in the afternoon, which turned into a slugfest. And I'm not talking about just hitting home runs. I'm talking about guys down on the diamond wailing away at one another after getting hit by pitches. In which I find to be disgraceful. Because when you're standing on the mound, as I was yesterday, and you're throwing at somebody's head, like the Yankee pitcher, Betances, did, and hits this Detroit Tiger right in the head, you heard the sound reverberate through Detroit Tiger Stadium. The pitch was about 98 miles an hour, and in retaliation for Sanchez, the catcher of the Yankees, originally being hit earlier in the game after he had hit a home run, because he's been on a tear of late, he beans the guy right in the head and claims, oh, the ball got away from him. Well, the game got away from the umpires. Joe Girardi, the manager, he got tossed. A number of the Yankees got tossed. Detroit Tigers got tossed. There were fights galore. There was a beanball war going on. Bottom line is, Yankees lost. They're in the playoff run. Detroit was out a month of Sundays ago. And Sanchez, who has been the premier player for the Yankees of late, in the absence of Judge, who has been fading fast, it will probably be suspended a number of days in the playoff run.
See, this is what happens when I don't go to the game. Because if you remember, that one Yankees game that I went to, along with my co-host on the Fox News specialist, Kat Temp, I mean, they dominated. They completely killed it. So I'm officially a good luck charm for your horse betting picks and the New York Yankees.
Well, let me tell you something. Anybody out there, I don't care what your team is, whether you're a Met fan, a Yankee fan, any pitcher that goes on the mound and throws 90-mile-an-hour fastballs at somebody's head is a punk, is a wuss, is not a man's man.
It's cheap.
That is really. And look, I'm a tried-and-true Yankee fan. You cut my veins and arteries. Betances, he's a local kid, big Dominican young man from Washington Heights, went to Murray Bertram High School right next to City Hall, One Police Plaza. Great ball player there. Great ball player for the Yanks. But how low budget?
That's cheap.
Beams him right in the head. The guy went down. I thought for sure, oh, this guy's on his way to the ER. This guy is probably going to have some serious neurological issues. Luckily, he was okay. But a real cheap shot.
Real cheap shot.
And talking of cheap shots, as the battle continues on which statues stay and which statues go in the city of New York, as Comrade Bill de Blasio has impaneled the Blue Ribbon Commission that will make those determinations in the next 90 days, right after the next mayor of the city of New York is elected, who's up for removal now? because some Jews are complaining.
Oh, so look at you. Look at you.
Yeah, it is. It's some kind of Jewish activist organization is claiming that Peter Stuyvesant, you know, the Dutch reform guy who came here and sailed into up the Hudson River.
Mr. Bed-Stuy himself, okay.
Basically discovered New York City, hoodwinked the Indians with $24 of trinkets to purchase the island of Manhattan. You know which Indians he bought the island of Manhattan from?
Inform me.
The Canarsie Indians. They were the suckers. They got basically bamboozled for $24 in trinkets.
That's a shame.
Peter Stuyvesant bought the richest piece of real estate
in the world. Yeah. Wow.
And that's not the reason. It's not Indian groups that are complaining.
No, it's Jews.
Jews claiming he was an anti-Semite. I'd like to know who wasn't an anti-Semite in those years. Who loved Jews in those years when you look at history?
Of course. And that's, you know, the same argument that my people would have is that we were persona non grata pretty much across the board during that period of history.
So Peter Stuyvesant, now there's a move to pull down any commemorations, any plaques, any statues in honor of Peter Stuyvesant. Secondly, there is a continuation to try to sully the reputation of former President Ulysses S. Grant, General Grant, because there are some Jews claiming that he was an anti-Semite since he had Jews removed from three states during the Civil War.
Hmm.
And so where does this end? It goes on and on and on.
Oh, who are you, Trump? Who are you, Trump now?
Well, Trump was right about that.
Hmm.
He was absolutely right. He said you start with the Confederate generals. Okay.
I don't think so. I think that this everything is negotiable. I was talking about this over dinner. It's negotiation, Sliwa. You know, I do think that there are some places in history where we can say, in the context of the time period, this made sense. And some stuff is just so egregious that it's going to be a nah. You know, like I told you the example when I was in college, the Sanders Hall, where the guy was literally the grand dragon of the KKK. That was a bit much. So I think it's a negotiation. So it's not all or nothing. We can negotiate what makes sense and what doesn't.
So tonight at sundown, it is Shabbat, Shabbos. This is the start of the Jewish holy day for Saturday. They're observant for the observant Jews. I'll tell you what, I'll negotiate with the Jews on this.
Great.
Since they stacked the deck against me in favor of Sid Rosenberg last night at Brooklyn Cyclone Stadium.
You're so petty. You're like the pettiest man I know.
I'll sit down with the Jews as they stir their Shabbos chicken and say, leave Peter Stuyvesant alone. Leave Ulysses S. Grant alone. Do you think we could start the negotiations that way?
You can start it that way. And then what if they say you could pick one? What if they say you pick one? Fine, we'll let one stay, one's got to go. Which one do you want to stay?
Oh, we get rid of the Dutch reform guy, Peter Stuyvesant.
Okay.
The guy who swindled the Indians for $24 in trinkets to buy Manhattan.
That's what the brokered negotiation would look like.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. And then the sublime to the ridiculous. Yesterday, major press conference of Italian, or what they call Italo-Americans, Italian-Americans, Supreme Cuisines, decrying de Blasio's possible attempt to remove Christopher Columbus statue from 59th Street Columbus Circle. And these folks really need to go back to school to get an education. Because if this is the best that the Italian-American community can do.
Well, it's your friend and mine that really stepped in it.
Let's quickly go, if we can, to James, who I believe is calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. James?
Yeah, actually, it's Chaim, an Orthodox Jew.
Yes, Chaim.
So I want to say that I 100% agree. It's not all Jews. It's just the liberal Jews that are coming out now saying to take down the monument. It's ridiculous. You know, that's not what he was known for. He was an anti-Semite. It could be he listed as Grant. All these things, but they're not like Hitler, that, you know, their claim to fame is the anti-Semitism. So you don't take it down. He's part of history. You don't take it down.
Thank you. Now, Chaim, I want to ask you, if you were in the stands last night at Brooklyn Cyclone Stadium in Coney Island on Jewish night, and there's Sid Rosenberg up against me throwing out the first pitch, who are you rooting for? The Booker Boy, Sid Rosenberg, or the Righteous Gentile, Curtis Lewa? Huh, Chaim?
Righteous Gentile.
The Righteous Gentile.
Rooting for me. Good, Chaim.
Righteous,
Sid Rosenberg. 1-800-848-WABC.
Imus in the Morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. It was a courageous thing to do, but someone was already here.
Really?
In 1492, Columbus sailed the
ocean blue. We got to take these political officials to school about Christopher Columbus. As you remember, a day before, Nicole Malliotakis, Republican conservative candidate to try to beat back de Blasio's reelection effort, was outside of the Columbus Circle statue saying, don't tear the Columbus statue down, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem with this mayor. He's quick to send off a press release, and now you have even Christopher Columbus, the founder of our nation, is under attack.
The founder of our nation. I didn't even know that.
Now, you thought that was bad, right? Then Bo Deedle, independent candidate for mayor, joined all the Supreme...
Bo Deedle!
That's right. Joined all the Supreme Cuisines on the steps of City Hall. And that's why I say this guy is the number one gavon, Jadrul. He's a stunat.
Oh,
listen,
that's
to
our boy. That's our homeboy.
He ain't my homeboy. That's your... Listen to what this stunat had to say about Christopher Columbus.
Stop the nonsense. We're not removing Christopher Columbus. He's our leader.
Could I hear that one more time, please, Mangaluch?
Stop the nonsense. We're not removing Christopher Columbus. He's our leader.
I have expected him to say, Christopher Columbus is out here doing great work. He's doing great things right now, similar to Frederick Douglass.
Christopher Columbus is our leader?
Our leader who's doing great work.
Where the hell did he get that one?
This is revisionist history.
Right, Nicole Malliotakis saying that Christopher Columbus, founder of the United States,
mm-hmm.
and then adding insult to injury, Bo Deedle saying, oh, leave Christopher Columbus alone. He's our leader.
Next thing you're going to hear is Christopher Columbus was the first president of the United States, and we cannot touch him. That's going to be next.
But they've so ruined their argument.
He's hero status.
They don't even know about Christopher Columbus. And I joke. I say that, right? Right? Can I say the Nina, the Pinta, the Santa, the Maria.
And the Maria.
Right? Mm. People get joke. These people were not joking. They were serious.
Maybe it's a Tucker Carlson. Maybe they'll both come back and say, geez, you guys can't take a joke. Bo Deedle.
No. That ain't happening. He's just a stunat. He is a Jadro.
That's my boy. Bo, you're my boy. I rocks with you, Bo.
Yeah, you like Italian-Americans to be dumb.
No.
Right? Although he's not an Italian-American. He pretends to be. Anyway, let's go to Mark, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Mark.
Hey, Curtis. Hey, Ebony. How you guys doing?
I've had better days.
No wonder I want to say you guys are awesome.
Thank
you. I really like the contrast of opinions that you guys offer. I just want to say I'm a religious Jew, and I couldn't give a damn about the statues. I don't care if the guy was an anti-Semite. I don't care if he was a racist. It doesn't bother me. It's a statue. It was put up. Everybody's got to stop being sensitive. Everybody's way too sensitive. It's like a bunch of babies. All this political correctness and all this BS that's going on just to make every single person happy. And it's tearing the country apart, and then you just have people fighting over nothing. It's ridiculous. Everybody go about their lives. Live your life. Do your business. You see a statue. The guy was an anti-Semite. He wasn't. He was. Who cares? It doesn't matter. It doesn't bother me. It shouldn't bother anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it bothers some people, but it doesn't bother me either, frankly. I find my efforts, my time, my energy better used around things that feel productive. But that's just me.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You mm-hmm. show up to work. You get on the radio show, say your opinion.
Correct.
And that's your job. I go about my job. I'm a property manager. I go about my job. That means
you got anything open? You got anything open for less than like $4,000 a month, Mark? Jeez. Killing me out here.
Right now.
Okay.
No, but I
call us back if something opens up.
Well, actually, I'm going to suggest where you move from Harlem, USA.
Where are you going to put me, Sliwa?
Where I went to school when I was a kid. I went to St. Matthew's Elementary School, was raised by the Irish nuns there, who taught me that it was St. Brendan the Navigator who discovered the New World, not Christopher Columbus.
And they beat your butt, right?
Damn right. Hit you so hard, your mother felt the vibrations. Mm. But those nuns, those Josephite nuns, told me, if you mark on the test that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World, you will fail.
Mm.
Now, I had to go back to Canarsie. with all the Supreme Cuisines and tell them, hey, Sister Ruth told me that it was St. Brendan the Navigator who discovered the New World. They say, well, what is she? What is she, crazy? Oh, she's Irish. That's right. She's out of her mind. You see? You see how it started?
It's all this cultural history. Everybody's got a different history according
right.
to Leif their
Erickson,
culture.
Right, Leif Erikson, Erik the Red, you know, if you're a squarehead and Norwegian, you claim you guys discovered, you know, North America. Then the Irish claim with St. Brendan, the navigator who was probably half in
but
the
I love
bath.
How anybody discovered a piece of land where thousands of people were already living. I'm just, this is just interesting to me.
Well, they were different than people. They were special. They were first.
Oh, my God. Okay. You know what? Let me, say,
were,
let me,
were,
say, let me save you from Indians. Yourself with some headlines
special.
From Ken Duffy.
Curtis and Ebony. The stories, the moments, the new midday show.
Up on the law and the law one.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
Yeah.
Look at you, Sliwa. Getting jiggy with it.
You got to go to WABCradio.com/live, and you can see me wigging out here. Whereas you, Ebony K. Williams.
Here you go.
Here your you rhythm, go. It just ain't where it needs to be, sister. It
sister,
really ain't.
Sister.
You got too much white blood in you.
Okay,
somewhere on your train. You just.
I cannot. I cannot with you.
The rhythm does not move you.
I cannot with you. Okay, we came back with that because it reminded me of my days as a varsity high school cheerleader at West Charlotte High in Charlotte, North Carolina.
You were not a pom-pom girl.
No, no, no. I wanted to step it up. You know me, Curtis. I like full excellence.
But seriously, between the cheerleaders and the pom-pom girls, the pom-pom girls were always looked down upon. It's not
It's hierarchy.
Equal.
Yeah, yeah. No, 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 no. None of that. You know, I'm gonna, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to go all the way. And I was a varsity cheerleader my last year. So I really wasn't the most athletic. I've confessed to you. That's not really my thing. I made the squad. I have no apologies, only because I had a great smile and a lot of spirit. I had school spirit.
Did you make it because of affirmative action?
No. We actually only had one white girl on our team.
Oh, wow.
Patty.
So she needed affirmative action.
Correct. She was the token. that's correct. We had Patty, but she could get with it. Patty, you shout out to Patty.
Patty Mayonnaise,
Patty,
right?
Patty that, was
that
killing
was her,
it.
That was her nickname. Patty Mayonnaise.
Patty Mayonnaise was killing it on the sidelines. But listen, so this is a we weren't that strict. We were more of a booty shaking, bumping and grinding type of cheerleading.
Those
squad.
Are the kind of cheerleaders I like.
look at
See,
you.
I hate it because if you go to a New York Giant game, and you'll get your chance to go to a New York Giant game.
Sure.
The owners don't permit cheerleaders.
No, none of that. No, no, no. It's strictly this kind of, like we're doing this story.
It's like the Pittsburgh Steelers. They will not permit cheerleaders.
It is no L.A. Lakers girls type of rundown. No. So this high school cheerleader by the name of Allie Wakefield, she, you know, just trying to be a good team player, splits, as you've seen at any game, is a part of the cheerleading practice.
Yeah.
Okay, you got to jump down, and sometimes you call them jump splits, as the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders do, and I have a confession, that is literally probably one of my top 10 favorite shows on television. I watch it every year religiously. It's been on for over 10 years. The Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders, it's on CMT, the country music, and I watch it, and it's amazing.
You are such a sickle fan, Tony and Lockie, the team that America hates.
I don't like the team either, but I love their cheerleaders because they take cheerleading to the next level. And if you can't do that jump split where they kick and then go straight down to that full split,
right,
you cannot make the team. So I guess this high school coach in Denver, Colorado, clearly was taking ish too serious, thought it was the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, because he made this 13-year-old, you got to see the video, Chris, he gets behind her, puts both hands on her shoulders and pushes her down into what's called a four split. Listen to the angst out of this young girl's mouth. I mean, golly, she's hysterical. And it does hurt in full defense. Apparently, she's being reported as having torn her ligament, which I believe. I wasn't the best out there, but, you know, I took it seriously. Tear your hamstring, tear your ligament. That's like an athletic injury. So this cheerleading coach fired for the second time, because this is the second time he's forced a young girl on a cheerleading squad into a force split.
So he's a real sadist.
He's crazy is what he is. But I think that I believe it because that's how these cheerleading coaches are. They take this stuff way too seriously.
Let's open up our phone lines on that. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I want to extend the conversation because whereas in cheerleading, they want to get you to do a full split. Not just the female cheerleaders, which predominate, but also male cheerleaders. Like Bush 43, the president. In college, he was a cheerleader.
Yeah.
So
you get a scholarship.
There's also another place you're forced to do splits of that type.
Is it the military?
No, martial arts. Oh. If you're particularly if you're studying taekwondo karate, which is a karate which focuses on high kicks, big splits. So oftentimes you're put into a compromising situation. And I would suggest never being in your never having been in your nylons before. That for a male to do a split because of the way we are anatomically, it's a lot more difficult than it is for you gals.
It is. But that said, some people are more flexible than others. I didn't have incredible flexibility, so doing that level of split was difficult for me. But you can hear this girl on the audio 9 times. She's begging and pleading, stop, stop, stop. So the question is, if you're a parent, to your point, boy or girl, if it's martial arts or cheerleading, do you want that type of coach that's going to insist and physically push them to the next level? Or is enough enough? They're just kids. At some point, you know, hey, some can do it, some can't, and you let off of them.
I looked at the video. Obviously, when the girl is crying and shrieking
screaming,
in pain, as I was yesterday with the colitis, you ease back. You ease up. And maybe you approach it another day. You get her to do more stretching first. You get a little more flexibility in that part of her leg so that it's a little easier for her to do a full split. But I've dealt in the martial arts world where, boy, your instructor start pushing you down
and
on your shoulders.
And some parents like that, though. Some parents say, I like it. Get on my kid. Make sure you push him to the next level.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Rich in White Plains. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Richie Rich.
What's up? I saw the video. The coach is black and the girl was white. If the ethnicities were reversed, we'd be talking about something different, and Al Sharpton be on a plane out there right now.
You know, I didn't even look at that through the prism of color, to be honest with you, Rich. I looked at the coach, who happens to be black. The student, in this case, student cheerleader, is white. How do you look at this through the prism of color?
There's about a gazillion examples of how the double standard exists.
I know, but nobody was making it an issue of color until you brought it up. It's simply what looked like a sadistic coach taking advantage of a student cheerleader who is basically saying, no mas, no mas, you know, a Roberto Duran, enough, enough.
Yeah, she's not having it.
That's my point exactly. If they were reversed, we'd be talking about, okay, are you telling me we wouldn't be?
I'm saying we wouldn't be, and I don't want to, I'm going to tell you why, Rich, and because let's go with your narrative if it's like some weird sexual thing. Most, and I can say this because I've experienced it, most male dance and cheer coaches, well, they're gay.
Yes.
That's the truth. They're gay.
I'm not implying sexual things.
Oh, so what are you talking, then I don't understand what you're talking about.
If it were a white coach inflicting pain on a black girl, okay, this would become a racial issue.
I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ebony, black girls ain't going to put up with that the way this white girl did, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's not even, you know, I don't say this often. I actually don't think this part has a racial component. I think when you're at that, this is an expensive sport. That level of cheering, I mean, these parents are paying thousands of dollars for this intensive. That's what I'm saying. I think some of these mothers, some of these dance fathers, they like it. They want their kid push to the max.
Well, they want them on the traveling team.
Yeah, they want them.
So this way they get involved in competitions
regionally,
and
maybe earn scholarships or whatever. Yeah, so I think that's more so my question. Is this the coach carrying out the wishes of the high expectations, the high performance, the high impact of this world? Or is she just a 13-year-old girl and enough is enough?
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Also, when we come back, I got to get your picks for the fight this weekend.
Yeah.
You talk about color. Here is a clear dynamic of color. White boy McGregor against the brother Mayweather.
I know some black folks that would debate the brother status of Floyd Mayweather.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
You for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
So all your trendoids, freakazoids, jet setters are going to be around the boob tube with their pay-for-play watching of Mayweather-McGregor, correct?
I'm going to a fight party.
All right, do you have a pick?
I watched the, what was that last boring Mayweather fight?
Pacquiao.
Pacquiao, I watched that.
I was in Vegas.
It's terribly, terribly boring. Because he's such a precise, see, this is weird because Mayweather's a boxer. We know McGregor's MMA. Mayweather's going to win, and it's going to be totally boring. But point for point, it's going to be Mayweather.
Well, I'm hoping that McGregor knocks him out because I hate Mayweather. Not only because I ran into him at that pre-Super Bowl party in Phoenix years ago, but I ran into his posse in Vegas for that last fight against Pacquiao, which has stunk out the joint.
Yeah, it was boring.
And we had serious words, me and his posse, because he travels with his posse.
I've seen him in his entourage. I've seen him in Miami with the entourage.
Right, there's sickle fans, Toby's and
they'll be on, like, motorcycles and stuff.
Right, right. Yeah. So we had some serious words. So I'm hoping that McGregor.
Yeah, you're hoping.
But the spudhead.
But do you think that's going to happen?
No. Okay. But I'm really hoping that McGregor knocks his block off. And by the way, we'll set up a great return fight.
Oh, yeah, the great white hype, McGregor against Mayweather. Sure.
Mayweather going to make $200 mil here.
Regardless.
Right. If he loses, there's definitely another
fight. A rematch. I think the whole thing is a fugazi, as you would say.
We will see. We will see. Anyway, let's go to Steve in Matzah Pizza, a.k.a. Massapequa, Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here.
How you doing, Ebony and Curtis? Ebony, just a question for you on your lawyer's side.
Sure.
Wouldn't you consider this an assault? The man was told to stop, and he also continued his act of aggression, and he caused a physical injury. I see that as an assault.
Okay, Steve, I'm going to answer you. I think it's a brilliant question, and it's right up the alley later on in the show at 2:30 today. We're going to be doing our weekly Friday 2:30 segment, Ask Ebony. So, Steve, you're kind of cutting the line here. You're giving me a first take at Ask Ebony where you can ask anything, legal, relationship, culinary, fashion, of course. You know, I'm very much a fashionista. Just send your questions to AskEbony at WABCRadio.com. But to answer your question, yes, it absolutely could be an assault because it's a harmful, unwanted and offensive touching. But then his defense would be that he didn't intend to harm her. But certainly from that yelling, screaming and crying we heard, Sliwa, he clearly hurt this young lady. She's in pain.
That coach was a sadist. There's no doubt about it.
But that's how these dance and gym teachers are, these cheerleading coaches. They're like cuckoo crazy. It's too serious.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader,
attorney, radio talk show host, Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up.
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make band-aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
School spirit, alpha number. Alpha step, omega step, kappa step, sigma step. Gangsters walk, pimps gon' talk. Ooh, hecky nah, that boy is raw.
I hate Kanye. I hate him with a passion. What a freakazoid he is.
What you hating on Kanye for? What you hating on Yeezy for, Curtis?
Is he in his straitjacket now? Or has he been released yet from
observation?
Actually,
he's probably upset a bit this morning after the release of Taylor Swift's midnight release of her new single where she kind of comes for Kimye.
Oh, are they still playing
They're
that
still beefing
MT
that.
Video beef from years ago? That's like almost a lifetime ago.
I know. Look at you. You're such a cool kid, Curtis.
You know, but I'm trying to think. Who do I hate more? Taylor Swift, the self-appointed ambassador of New York, not, or Kanye, I'm a freakazoid and a nut job, West? I don't know. That one's
it's a toss-up. Okay.
It's a toss-up.
So he came back with, that was one of the singles from Kanye's debut album, by far his best body of work, in my opinion, College Dropout. A lot of people don't know this. Kanye's mother, my sorority sister, Dr. Donda West, may she rest in peace, was a college professor, a very very brilliant woman, a big advocate of education. I was quite disappointed when Ye dropped out of school to go be a superstar musician.
I did not know that. I know he was a Mama Luke, that's for sure, mama's boy, but I did not know
that. It ain't been
right
since she died, by the way.
Right.
But anyway, so yeah, so education was actually a big part of their family life, and for many of us, and I've been on record and stand by my statement, for me and my family, coming from the generational poverty we came from, the educational opportunity made all the difference. The ability to further and complete my education, earn a living as an attorney, and then eventually transition to broadcasting, blah, 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 blah. Above the fold in the New York Times, and I've been accused by many folks of being an affirmative action baby, the beneficiary of a policy that many in this country find to be discriminatory, putting their white brothers and sisters at a disadvantage. So we're going to clarify some of that in a second. But even with affirmative action being in place still by our Supreme Court, blacks and Hispanics are still underrepresented at the top colleges and universities in our country now more so than in the past 35 years. And that's surprising to a lot of people, Curtis, because they would think, well, if affirmative action is what we think it is, it just says if you're black or brown, you get a spot, then what's up? Why are the numbers not going up? And there's a few reasons why, and the Times piece goes deep into it. One of those reasons, and I don't think people realize, so again, when we talk about the top schools, you talked about Ivy Leagues, of course, which there are eight of, and what we call flagship state universities, which I attended one of them, UNC Chapel Hill. Other ones, UVA, University of Michigan Ann Arbor, UCLA, UC Berkeley, those types of schools. We just are not there. We're not there in large amounts. We're only representing about 9% of the college population there, although we as black Americans represent 15% of those age students. So we should be there roughly about 15%. We're only there at about 9%.
And this study includes Hispanics,
It also includes Hispanics. I was going to say, and they're doing a little bit better than we are collectively, but nowhere near where their numbers should be based off of how much they're growing in population. So they are still underrepresented based off of how many Hispanic college-age students are in the country.
I think I know what accounts for this.
Well, you're pretty damn smart, Curtis, so I'm sure you do.
So the affirmative action wave, which came about in the 80s, first arguments were made in the 80s, was meant to promote more black and Hispanics and get them into colleges of substance. Let's call them college, not just junior colleges, colleges of substance.
Yeah, high-performing colleges and universities.
Back then, though, there weren't as many Asians and East Indians flooding the campus areas as there are now. Mm-hmm. So now, in addition to the preponderance of white students, you've got an increased number of Asians, both those who were born and raised here and those who come from overseas to come to college here. Stony Brook University, State University, perfect example. You go out to Suffolk County. It's like Little Chinatown on the campus. There are both Chinese students who are both from America and are coming from overseas. And then the huge increase of what they call East Indians. And these include students from India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, whether they were born here or they were born overseas, flooding into our universities. Mm-hmm. So now you have, in addition to the whites, you've got the Asians and the East Indians. So your percentile would go down,
That's
I would think,
true.
Just based on the percentages.
I think that is absolutely partly responsible. I think the other thing is the policy itself, Curtis Lee, has evolved. You're right. The first arguments were made in the 80s. Back then, and this is where a lot of people still think affirmative action is, it's not. It used to be a quota system. It used to say a certain number of the student enrollment had to be reserved for black and Hispanic students. They got rid of that. In the mid-90s, Sandra Day O'Connor was one of the major decision writers on that and said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. What we're going to do is have it, and I want to read this because people got to know it, Curtis. You cannot be walking around being mad at affirmative action when you don't know what it is. Now affirmative action is that colleges and universities can consider race or ethnicity, quote, one element in a holistic admissions policy. It can be considered, but it's not a magic bullet.
Okay. What do they mean by holistic?
So that means most colleges, and I've seen the criteria at some colleges, it's like up to 32 criteria. Hmm. So what does it look like? Race, one. Gender, one. Socioeconomic background, how much money your parents make, one. First generation college graduate, one. Or the opposite, legacy candidate, one. Regional, are you urban student? Are you a suburban student? And the list goes on and on and on. All these, you know, are you a cheerleader? Do you play a musical instrument? Are you in student government? All these damn different criterias for which race and or gender can be one. But not the all. So basically, if you've got bad grades or even average grades and you're black and brown, you're not going to Harvard. It's just not happening.
Well, the headline says it all. Affirmative action yields little progress on campus for blacks and Hispanics after 35 years. Was it all for naught? Or
I don't think so. I don't think. I'm going to tell you why. Because I see both sides of this. I'm a fan of affirmative action. I hear this all the time, too, Chris. I'm sure you do, too. Well, when are we not going to need it anymore? When are we going to get to a place where everything is equal? It's 2017. Maybe it's 2020. We don't need. Well, obviously, we're not there yet. That is what this study tells us, is that the equality that we seek in our beautiful land is not yet here. And here's another place where you're correct. I do think the influx of more Asian and South Indian students is an issue. But that's not their fault that they're performing at an exceptionally high academic level. I'm not going to hate on them. Here's the other thing, Curtis. When you're in school and your boys are in elementary school right now, you know this is the time that's going to set the tone for their academic long-term success. So for many elementary and secondary schools with predominantly black and Hispanic student bases, less experienced teachers, less advanced coursework offered, which that's a big deal. The reason I got to go to Chapel Hill on an academic scholarship, my GPA was high because I had all of these AP classes, advanced placement math, advanced placement science, advanced placement biology, and I performed well in them. If I went to a school, I could still be smart. If I went to a school that didn't have those classes, Curtis, I would have never gotten into Chapel Hill because I couldn't have been competitive. So that makes the difference. What kind of school you come from as a middle and high school student, that makes all the difference in the world.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And then what this study doesn't deal with is the caps. Mm. And again, when I was growing up, they capped the number of Jewish students who could go to colleges and universities because they wanted them to be a certain percentage. And now they're doing it increasingly with Asians and East Indians.
And they're suing, too. I believe it was last week there was a lawsuit filed by Asian students around the caps at Ivy League schools.
Let's go to Peter in Manhattan. Welcome to Curtis at Ebony on WABC. Pete.
Yes, Ebony, I'd like to welcome you to WABC. You are relatively young, so you don't realize the affirmative action program primarily wanted to introduce white women, primarily Jewish women, into mainstream. Otherwise, they were categorized as minority, and when we know women are not a minority. Another thing, blacks have to get away from the inferiority complex of including themselves with other groups. The fact is, the only way you know someone is Hispanic is by their surname. So therefore, blacks, especially your generation and a little older, have to realize we fought the cause. Everyone benefited from us. Don't forget, Jews were considered non-white. Italians were considered non-white. So this thing about black, white, whatever, it's a cover-up for trying to keep the American Negro in his quote-unquote place. Ebony, I am very sorry, but when we call ourselves people of color, I don't know if you're old enough to know it, but people fought for over 100 years to stop being called colored people. But
no, I mean, I understand. I'm not really sure your age demographic. I won't ask it, Peter. I've been on record to be proud to be called black, so you're preaching to the choir on
but
that.
But see, now, I'm not blaming you. I'm saying most people don't want to be called black because it's alienating. Because
right. We've been shamed around it. I understand.
Wait a minute. Donald Trump does say one great thing. The press is corrupt. And the fact is, system is so afraid. Wait a minute, I'll give you an example. Do you know a white woman, I believe she was Jewish, challenged affirmative action when in fact Barbara Walters would still be an executive secretary if it wasn't for affirmative action?
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I don't know about that particular fact about Ms. Walters. I do know that women, white women primarily, do largely benefit from affirmative action. That is true.
I don't think Barbara Walters benefited from affirmative.
And I said not Barbara Walters. Yeah. I'm saying in general, in terms of like the college education.
Although, make yourself useful here, Justin B. Love. Why don't you check the Wikipedia
on that? I think Barbara Walters also benefited from being a talented journalist and the fact that her father, Lou Walters, was already a big deal in the New York scene.
And that she would have that urge to merge with some of the people she would interview, like Fidel Castro.
Oh, Lord.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-92. Let's go to James calling from Larchmont. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Jimmy?
How you doing? Just a question.
How are you doing? That's the question, Jimmy. You sound like you're a little bummed out. You okay?
No, I'm all right. I'm good.
Okay.
I was just wondering. I was listening to what Ebony was saying about the affirmative action and saying that the statistics are showing that on campuses that there's not equality as a result of affirmative action. I'm wondering if besides affirmative action maybe not working, there's a possibility that the grades in the blacks and Spanish are not as high, or these people are just not electing to go to college as often.
Okay, so good question. Let's talk about the grades part, because I can't speak on and speculate about them electing not to go. The grades part is probably partly true, but let's talk about why. Now, some of it, some people just don't have the academics. We know that, right? That's some. But some, because I'm somebody, and I write about this in my book, I'm a smart person, but I'm not a genius. But I got really good grades because I was able to go to really good public schools, have really good resources, have teachers and people investing in my academic success. The study shows black and brown students in elementary and middle schools don't have the experienced teachers, don't have the advanced coursework, don't have the high quality instructional materials. So, James, we can't deny the correlation between if you have bad teachers, bad coursework, then your grades are probably not going to be as good. There's a correlation there for sure.
Okay, but I don't think that saying that the numbers are not the same on college campuses, I don't think that necessarily proves that.
It doesn't. No, it's not. It's not a one thing. No, I agree. It's not one solution fits all. This is a multi-prong issue that we got to unpack layer by layer.
Yes, I agree.
Now, you to harken back to our discussion about your cheerleading days, there was Patty Mayonnaise.
The only white girl on the team.
Was she a product of affirmative action? Was she put on the team as a token?
You know, I think if she'd been black, I don't know if she'd make it. But I would say this. I had no qualms with her being on the team because there is something for diversity, including the other way around. So our team was better for having blonde Patty Mayonnaise, and she could cheer. So I wasn't mad at it at all.
Let's go to Tony calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony, Tone.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
He's had better days.
Okay. Hey, this is mainly directed to Ebony. You know, I'm hearing so much about the black people being oppressed and all of that stuff, affirmative action. Here's my comment. There was two agricultural products that kept the black people enslaved for many years, and that was cotton and tobacco. Yet, I never see collective boycotts or any mention of stop purchasing anything that's made of cotton, or let's stop smoking Newports and buying blunts and stop using any kind of tobacco product.
Well, Tony, can I speak to your question or your point?
Sure.
My family, I came from a descendant of a slave plantation in South Louisiana. It was neither of those two. It was sugar plantations down there. So your boycott would have to be much, much broader than just tobacco and cotton. And I think that's missing the issue. That's a different issue. That's a different conversation. We're talking about educational opportunities for black and brown students and women and in other categories that are affected by affirmative action.
Can you imagine if you told people they'd have to boycott cotton and have to start wearing polyester?
Yeah. Or how about telling them to boycott sugar, because we're all sugar addicts in this country. Seriously.
And boycott blunts? Philly blunts and Dutch Masters?
I think that would be easier than boycotting sugar. I think people would like more people would be able to boycott tobacco than sugar. That is a no. You want black folks to stop eating sugar? Oh, you're tripping.
Oh, no, you're right, because when you buy that one little packet of Kool-Aid.
Oh, God, I knew it. Oh, Lord, where's Harris Faulkner?
5-pound bag of Domino's sugar.
Oh, Lord. No, Splenda, not me. I'm a Splenda
Where's
baby.
Where's the taste of the Kool-Aid if it's accompanied with a 5-pound
bag
of Domino's sugar?
What is Kool-Aid, like fresh squeezed juice? It's like powder. What are you talking about?
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Bring the noise!
Studio View, MWABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect,
a great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
And I put fresh strawberries in here, too.
Oh, what a good idea.
Do you make Kool-Aid?
I'm going to try this.
Do I do what?
Make Kool-Aid.
No, I don't make Kool-Aid. But I made an adult beverage for us.
Oh, sounds like you and Brian Kilmeade. That was Brian Kilmeade exchanging with Fox News host Harris Faulkner, the other black woman that hosts the show Monday through Friday on the network. Harris cooking a delightful meal, and Kilmeade asking her, do you serve Kool-Aid with that? So it's like you and Kilmeade on the same, I guess, black folks just sit around drinking Kool-Aid all day.
No. Don't get me wrong. They just drink Kool-Aid with a 5 pound of Domino
That makes
sugar
it no better. Hey, Sliwa, that doesn't make it better. The point is, black folks is not just sitting around drinking Kool-Aid, okay? Bada bing, bada boom.
I didn't say you had Kool-Aid pumping through your veins and arteries. But anyway, let's go to John calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Ebony and Curtis on WABC. Johnny?
Hey, Ebony. Hey, Curtis. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Ebony, just a quick question. I don't want to fight you on it, but in your last comment about...
Put up your dukes and fight, John. It's like Mayweather-McGregor.
No, you win.
I'm kidding.
No, just a quick comment on what you just said, that, you know, had Patty Mayonnaise been black, she probably wouldn't have made the squad and that was okay. That's actually not okay. And that's actually the problem with forcing diversity through affirmative action. If you were the person who happened to be the next best player or person in line to make that.
In the case, the next best cheerleader. I understand what you're saying, and that's not a wrong point of view. You're not wrong, John. I just think another way to look at it is our squad was better because Patty Mayonnaise was there. Even if there would have been a stronger cheerleader who was black, the diversity did yield. We got to understand, because we're high school students, so we learned from one another. When we had the sleepovers, we're understanding a different perspective, a different point of view, a different kind of get down. And I thought that was valuable.
And it is, and that's what, and that upside is definitely there for sure, and not to be argued.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. And then you went on to say that the diversity worked when it went that way too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little put off by that, just a little bit, because diversity is not a directional thing.
No. Okay, maybe I said it in a way that wasn't as you know, sophisticated. When I say that, because people always think diversity means more black, more brown, more color. Diversity can also mean more white, more men,
well,
more Curtis.
That's exactly what's happened in Crown Heights.
Yep.
We're going to be leading up to the annual West Indian Day Parade that I've been participating with the Guardian Angels in for years. That'll be the Labor Day weekend. And there'll be before the pre-celebration Juve, which has always been fraught with violence.
Yeah,
they're
going to
start it at like 6 in the morning now instead of... like 6 at night the night before.
Didn't one of de Blasio's,
Andrew Cuomo's assistant got killed in the crossfire, and a number of others have been injured and killed. But you talk about diversity, Crown Heights is not the same Crown Heights that I went to school in.
Mm-hmm.
Crown Heights now is very diverse, not only between West Indians, blacks, and Lubavitcher, Hasidic Jews, but so many white millennials who have poured in. And that's caused tension. And up next, we're going to discuss a gin mill owner, a restaurant owner, telling the blacks in the community, who are still the majority, you don't tell me how to run my restaurant. I'll run my restaurant the way I want to. And they're saying, oh, no, you won't. Not in our neighborhood.
Mm.
The lines are drawn here. We're going to see whose side you're on, Ebony K. Williams, your fellow millennials or hipsters or the African-American and West Indian community. But first, let's get the news headlines from Ken Duffy.
In the morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
Recognize this tune? The brass section blazing. Classic, Crown Heights Affair, Dreaming a Dream. This is what you always talk about with your book,
yeah.
Dreaming a Dream.
Dreaming a Dream.
But anyway, this was a group that came, that went back in the 70s, early 80s. But its name was Crown Heights. Mm. And it represented a neighborhood that has gone through a tremendous transition. We just went past the anniversary of the riots in Crown Heights in the early 90s. that pitted blacks, West Indians versus the Lubavitchers there, the Hasidim. And we see that there is the upcoming West Indian Day Parade again down Eastern Parkway, which I'll be attending with the Guardian Angels. But in advance, Juve, which is the pre-party celebration, which has been fraught with violence. The NYPD is trying something a little different. You want a Juve, you got to start at 6 a.m. in the morning of the day of the parade.
Wow.
I'll be there to let everybody know how that goes. But really, the big story in Crown Heights is the tremendous changes that have taken place in the makeup of the community that at one time had been Reformed Jews and Irish. When I first went to St. Matthew's Elementary School in 1960, run by the Josephite Irish nuns on Eastern Parkway and Utica Avenue. Then increasingly African Americans moved in, followed by West Indian and Caribbeans. And as the Reformed Jews moved out, the Lubavitchers, the Hasidim, moved in. So it was really you had West Indians, you had African Americans, and you had the Lubavitchers. And then the most recent tidal wave, tsunami, almost like this hurricane that's ready to hit the coast of Texas, have been you millennials and hipsters, mostly from places like Iowa, where there are more pigs than people, and Idaho, where there are more potatoes than people. And they have flooded into Crown Heights. And with them have come the bistros, the bars, the restaurants, the gin mills, and a lot of economic activity and investment in the area. But there's also come a lot of tension.
I would imagine.
There is a young hipster woman. Her name is Brennan, 33 years old. She came in, she leased out some space, and she put in a gin mill in a restaurant. And naturally, she wanted to promote it with a press release, like a lot of the others promote themselves, because there's a lot of competition there.
Sure.
And she says, oh, you got to come to my bar, Summerhill, and look over the bar itself, and you'll see there's a pockmarked wall from all the bullets that had been embedded into the wall, because at one time, that area of Crown Heights had a lot of crime, a lot of violent crime. So the locals, mostly the West Indians and the African Americans, objected to that and said, wait a second. That was then. This is now. This is not the same crime-ridden neighborhood that you're claiming that your bar represents. We want you to spackle over those bullet holes and cease and desist making references to them.
A new narrative. Come up with a new narrative.
Now, she says, hey, this is my bar, my restaurant, Tough Nookies. Basically, like Danny Aiello said, to bugging out.
Yeah.
You want black photos on the wall? Get your own freaking pizzeria. You can have blacks up there instead of Italians.
Yeah, do the right thing. Okay.
That tension.
Yeah.
But it went beyond just a simple argument. The blacks and West Indians came out last weekend, and they had a heated demonstration outside of our gin mill and restaurant. And Brennan, though, was sitting there at a table outside on the sidewalk. And she was talking trash to the demonstrators, and they were talking trash to her. So all of a sudden, cooler minds prevailed and said, wow, there could be violence. This could be like, do the right thing here.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Let's have a community meeting. Mm-hmm. Let's see if Ms. Brennan would be willing to come in and give her point of view. And we'll invite in all members of the community. And that's what happened last night. And boy, was it raucous. The community speaking first.
She's never experienced violence as we have. She's never had to experience or hear bullets flying.
And then the owner of the restaurant gin mill that's called Summerhill, that's been in the eye of the storm, Ms. Brennan, spoke.
The biggest misconception is that I use this as a marketing tool. I kept a wall for one reason. I'm keeping it for the same reason, to keep the integrity of a 100-year-old building.
I don't know about that. I do preserve a right to keep it because it's her restaurant, her bar. That is the way it goes. I don't know about the integrity.
So they were not able to resolve this last night at the meeting. In fact, more divisions were created. Ms. Brennan, she doubled down and said, it's my bar, it's my restaurant. If I want to say there are bullet holes behind the bar, then that's my right to do it.
Yep.
Again, you want your own bar and restaurant. You want to talk about the gentrified Crown Heights that is now, where it's cool, calm, and collected and not violent like it was. Go out. Get your own gin mill restaurant. Again, almost like Danny Aiello saying a bug out, and then all of a sudden, Spike Lee had to step in and try to calm the situation down. Ladies and gentlemen, should this woman have to change the makeup of her bar and her restaurant to satisfy and suit the demands of the community that she's operating in, that is still predominantly black and West Indian. They want the bullet holes spackled over. It turns out there were never bullet holes in the bar to begin with.
No, it was from like where like paintings and mirrors had been up there.
Right.
But she was trying to be funny.
This is like Theater of the Mind.
Sure.
She's being funny, but it's also a great marketing vehicle because a lot of the yuppies and hipsters and millennials, they have heard of what the neighborhood was like in the past. They just have no idea. And this gives them a little bit of a feel like, you know, it's almost like the ambiance of what was in Crown Heights. Should she have to change the makeup of her bar and restaurant to suit the needs of the African-American and West Indian community? Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Or put it, oh, go ahead.
That's 1-800-848-9222. Okay, Miss Millennial and Hipster,
say,
whose side are you on?
Put another way, maybe not suit their needs, but respect the culture, respect the community in which her bar does reside. I don't think that's too much to ask. But ultimately...
But remember, no blacks or West Indians are going there. It's only white millennials and hipsters.
Not the point. Not the point. You're still in that space. So I think there is an expectation that you respect the space you're occupying. That said, this is America. When you're a business owner, you get to run your business how you see fit. I do not think she should have to take the wall down. It has nothing to do with her being a millennial hipster. It just has to do with the fact that it's her business. It's that simple.
You know something? And I think you should go over there instead of hanging out in Harlem, USA, which is being gentrified. I'll take you down to Crown Heights. You can sit there with Miss Brennan as the community is protesting on the other side of the police barricades, screaming invectives at her.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to make that same statement to all of your brothers and sisters at the barricades.
And you know that I would, and with no damn problem. Absolutely.
By the way, you know there's a restaurant, a steakhouse, a very famous one over in Hoboken called Dino and Harry's. And they actually advertise, ask about the bullet holes behind the bar.
Hmm.
Now, it's very gentrified.
That's
Hoboken
tacky.
Now.
That's super tacky, though. The fact that they're calling it out like that, it gives you a very clear impression as to they're trying to bait around a nasty, dangerous cultural stereotype.
Let's quickly go to Johnny, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Johnny. Johnny is gone. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Rockaway. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony, Chris.
Cliff. Anyway.
Oh, Cliff.
I got a solution. On the pockmarked wall, put that was then. And on a finished wall, a newly finished wall, which probably neighbors the pockmarked wall, put this is now.
Yeah, but you see, the point is that there were never bullet holes in the building to begin with.
Where'd they come from?
No, she, you see, when they were doing reconstruction so that she could get the specifics of having the bar she wanted, they took down some old hanging ornaments, and it looked like bullet holes, and so she just played with it and said, oh, yeah, they're bullet holes.
She was trying to be funny, Cliff.
Well, that's not funny.
It's not funny, exactly.
Let's go to Rich, who I believe is calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here at WABC. Rich?
Yeah.
Yes, Rich.
Morning. Who's this?
Hey,
it's Curtis Lee.
Who the hell are you calling, Rich?
Oh, you know what? I'm listening to your radio. It's late. Hey, what's the address of this place? I want to go there and have a beer.
What a gavone you are. The place is called Summerhill.
Yeah, I know, but where? Crown Heights is big.
I know. I think it's off Washington Avenue. I'm not sure. You go north of the Brooklyn Museum on Eastern Parkway and Washington Avenue. And I think you'll hit it because then you hit Hipsterville there, which is about 8 blocks north.
Hipsterville. Listen, then me and you, we'll take them over to Holy Cross Cemetery where all the gangsters are buried. We'll give them a whole tour.
Yeah, we should do that. And then after that, we could go over to St. John's Cemetery where we could show them the grave of Joseph Colombo that I spit on and John Gotti Sr. that I spit on in Middle Village, Queens. Would you like to accompany us
no,
on that?
No. You guys,
come on, be brave.
Go have fun with that. I'm
anyway,
good.
Anyway, let's go to the phones. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Ted, who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Teddy.
Hey, guys. How you doing? And Ebony, we're glad you're there.
Thank you, Ted.
Here's my point. If you're working in the community, you might want to do something to respect the community.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, it's still her right if she wants to alienate the community and lose a lot of customers. But to me, the bigger question the community could concern themselves with You got schools in that area, and I was a teacher, you got schools in that area with low attendance and poor achievement. That might be a better channel for people's energy.
Well, that is true. There's the old Prospect High School that they had to close for that very reason. It was just horrible, horrible. But, Ted, she still is the owner. It's her venue. I don't know how all of a sudden...
You can't force her. I think what Ted is saying is that it might be even in her best business interest to show a little respect. I see what you're saying.
Or how about this? Would this matter? Have a happy hour for the locals.
Yeah.
In which it's a dollar beer and a dollar shot.
Get some community
and a dollar oysters.
I think that'd be a great idea.
You see that? And I bet you that would calm down the locals quite a bit. Imagine a buck for a beer. Yep. And you know how you millennials are, these imported.
Sure.
You know, it's like
the craft beers. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, but you'll pay $4 for Pabst Blue Ribbon.
No, I wouldn't. I don't drink PBR.
We used to pay $4 for a whole case of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yeah, no PBR over here, Betty.
Let's
quickly go
to Rocco, who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony, Rocco.
Yeah, Curtis, I just want you to know something. I'm 62 years old. I'm an Italian electrical engineer. I couldn't listen to you with the other person. I love Ebony. Oh. I think, what a combination. Really beautiful. And I missed you. I would keep tuning you in, and then I'd hear the other person, and I'd have to shut it off. Ebony, I love you. I think that you make a great combination. You know what? I'm gonna visit the ladies' establishment. I'm gonna go and have one beer because I always watch what I drink. I don't drink and drive. And I just want you to know I love your program. I love the both of you and continued success.
Well,
and I also
the only thing you didn't do, Rocco, was offer a proposal for marriage.
Rocco. Don't you worry about him. He's just hating.
And I never even seen you, Ebony. I haven't even seen you. I'm sure if I saw you, I would adore you even more.
Well, Rocco, this is what you got to do. Like everyone else out there, you got to go to WABCradio.com/live. That's WABCradio.com/live. You actually get to eyeball Ebony in addition to listening to her and me as we conduct this radio for you old-timers on the terrestrial radio or your new jacks on the app, the WABC app of streaming audio or on your worktop computer. And by the way, I noticed in a new article promoting your book.
Yes.
You talk about how you were coming in here all bummy at first.
Yeah, that's in The Observer. Mm-hmm. I owned it.
All bummy, and then all of a sudden you realize that, hey, we have video, and you had to dress for success.
No, it wasn't even the video. It was but I noticed you and the Suits and the Muckety Mucks and Justin Belove and Brian over here on the board, y'all were giving me the side eye. Like, well, what does she think this is?
Yeah, it was the Maluk. 1-800-848-WABC. Well, guess what? Good news for you, Ebony K. Williams.
Woo, what?
We were just talking about it yesterday. You said, to go to Whole Foods means you got to pay a whole paycheck.
That's damn right. Whole Foods, whole paycheck.
No more. Bezos has said in order to be competitive, he's slashing prices as of Monday.
Mm.
And will that impact a salary that a person makes, whether they're living where you do, Harlem, USA, or anywhere in the tri-state area? Up next, how much is enough at all different levels?
Well, he's going to have to slash pretty deep if he's going to get me to go from Trader Joe's to Whole Foods. Because I'm intimidated by Whole Foods pricing, I'll tell you.
And then get your questions ready, because at 2:30, it's the Ask the Ebony segment time.
Oh, Ask Ebony at WABCradio.com. Legal questions, cooking questions, love relationship, travel. And you know I love fashion.
And I got to be your Maytag and be
my Vanna White. You're the best.
Bring the noise!
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and lead
attorney, radio talk show host,
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make band-aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after two. As we sit high atop Madison Square Garden and these great facilities brought to us by NJDiet.com, now Sliwa.
What jam is this?
I didn't pick it. Just don't blame this on me. This is Justin Belove. He wanted some Pussycat Dolls because it's Friday.
It's all right. It's all right.
You gotta let it pass.
Blase, blase. Okay. I'll let it pass.
You let it pass. Oh, aren't you in a good mood today? So this is about money. And that's something, as you know, folks don't like to talk about. You know, they want to keep that quiet. But, you know, we New Yorkers, I don't really think we have time for that. We got to figure out what's what. What's the average income? What are rates? What are rents? We got to get it out on the table. So we had a young gentleman shadowing us this morning asking, he's learning about the radio station, how to put a show together, the rundown, whatnot. And so in our pre-show meeting, we were discussing topic rundown. So I asked him. Said, I think it's Neil, what do you think the average salary is yearly in this country? What's a good average salary? He said, about a six figures, about $100,000. Oh, poor Neil. New York City, $100,000 is not going too far. But this new study takes into account across the entire country the average salary, the average income for someone in your age group. Because remember, a couple weeks ago here on Curtis and Ebony, we said that, what was it? $100,000 wouldn't put you in the top 20% in any age group, which is really quite a shame because I remember growing up, that was the goal. The goal was to get to a six-figure income. That was the American dream. That's how you knew you were doing it big.
The goal was to make what Mickey Mantle made back in the 1960s for the New York Yankees when he was the best player in baseball, $100,000 a
year. Which is, I mean, baseball or football or basketball players professionally now probably wouldn't show up to a practice for $100,000 now. But good news. Let's start with that. Salaries are up in the U.S. by 4.2% overall compared to the same time period last year. That's a good thing. On average, the entire average of the country, most people are bringing home about $8.59 a week. That's pretty good. Sounds pretty good.
That's gross?
That's gross.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we all know
so
what happens after.
So less than $1,000 a week.
Right, correct. And after Uncle Sam gets his, then we know what time it is. But that's the good news is we are up 4.2. So let's break it down. And I know the men are going to get all in a hissy. I have to point out that on average, women are only making about 83% of what the guys are bringing home. It's a variety of reasons for it, but I got to point it out. So let's talk. 16 to 19-year-old men per average per year, take a stab as to how much they're making. 16
what?
To 19 a year.
About 18.5.
You're close. About 21.9.
Okay.
You're pretty close. Okay. Try 20 to 24-year-olds.
20 to 24-year-olds. About 23.5.
You're not bad at this. 27.3.
27.3. Okay.
Okay. Let's go to, this is my age bracket, 25 to 34.
All right. That should jump up a bit. I'd say about 30.
You calling me old?
35.
Close.
35,000.
43. Okay. Like 40,300.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll do where I'll be soon, 35 to 44.
35 to 44. Now, that should jump up noticeably.
That's pretty, yeah. You're well into your career at that point or your job or whatever you're doing.
I'd say 55.
50,000. 50,700 on average. Mm-hmm. 55 for men. You're right. For your men, you're 55. Now, I will say, I got a note. I'm noticing the gap between the men and the women is widening as we're getting older. Because for 34 to 44, men are averaging 55. You hit it on the head. Women, want to take a guess where we are?
42.
45. Hmm. Almost a $10,000 gap. That gap used to be smaller. So 45 to 54 a year, average total, 50,000. 56 for men, 44 for women. Now let's go to your bracket, 55 to 64. What do you think the average male salary for your bracket is?
72.5.
God, you're such an elitist, Sleema. 55,000 still.
Wow.
So what we're seeing is a peak.
So it flattens out.
Yeah. Around 35 to 44 for men and women, we're all peaking. And in fact, it starts going down for once you get to 65.
But this is nationwide.
This is all nationwide. Yeah, I mean, obviously, these numbers don't mean a lot for us here in New York City. You got to multiply all those numbers by about 3, 4, or 5 for us to be able to survive. But I thought it was interesting that the good news is there was a 4.2 uptick percent, but overall, the incomes, I guess I was a little surprised because I remember these incomes being around average 10, 15 years ago when I was coming out of high school and college. So to see that they have not gone up significantly in 10 to 15 years, a $50,000 salary was kind of average back in 2004, 2005.
Well, that was the big beef during the Obama years. The big argument used against them is that salaries seemed to be stagnant. Nobody seemed to be doing better, even though costs were increasing.
Correct.
So that worked as a detriment to Hillary as she was attempting to be basically become Barack Obama too. But I'd like to ask the question out there is, because these figures seem to be stagnant at certain points in your life, has it required you to have to multitask, to go out there and work 2-3 jobs just to be able to make a 6-figure salary that some people believe they would have to hit in order to make ends meet?
Sure.
Or the fact that you've got 2 income earners in that same household making just about $100,000 when all is said and done, when you figure out gross versus net, taxes, fees, fines, the whole nine yards. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And it is amazing because you used to be able to get one job and used to be able to pretty much count on that being able to support you and your family
throughout the course of the year. I hear you, and I heard about those days, Curtis, but I cannot imagine it. I'm a single woman. I have no children, and I literally work 3 jobs, and I'm always looking for another hustle because, A, you know, you never know what's going to happen, and you just got to be prepared, and it doesn't ever feel like enough.
Yeah, but I don't see you, like, going to a local supermarket getting 4 boxes of corn muffins for $1. You don't strike me as that type, somebody who is going to really look at their
ramen,
budget.
I eat ramen noodles sometimes.
All right, so from your college days.
I like ramen noodles. Maybe it makes me feel comfortable. Maybe it's a comfort food because it reminds me of my youth. Perhaps you're right.
But imagine it. Think of it. You got civil servants out there. You got uniformed services, whether they're cops or firefighters, especially when they first start out, making barely enough to be able to afford rent.
Sure.
So oftentimes it almost requires that you have to work a second job under these circumstances and have 2 people, 2 income earners from the same household.
Mm.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And what would you suggest be done to try to lessen the pressure and the stress of that kind of income necessity that people need just to sneak by, just to get by?
I mean, look, here are some common solutions that I'm opposed to personally, but they work for some people. A lot of people, even well into their 30s and 40s, do the roommate thing. I've seen it in New York City. Grown people with good jobs making well over $100,000 a year, they will take a roommate to lessen the financial stress of the rent and mortgage charges.
Or they'll do an Amway number and get involved in a program, some kind of a Ponzi program.
Oh, sure. I thought you meant get involved in a relationship so they could split the bills. That was the Ponzi scheme you were going to say.
No, you're shilling products.
Oh,
whether it's perfume, sex toys, Amway products, whatever it is, Tupperware.
Yeah, the parties at the house.
Right,
yeah,
try to get that secondary income coming
in. But I have heard of people wanting to get in a relationship just to relieve the financial stress. What are your thoughts about that? About finding a girlfriend or boyfriend so you can move in to split the bills.
That's crazy.
Because people do it, Curtis.
That's going to lead to nothing but double trouble.
Yeah.
Because it's short-term gain, long-term pain. Because you're really with somebody you don't really want to be with, but they're either your sugar daddy or sugar mama, or they're helping at least to equalize the fiscal load that is going to be required of you in order to pay that nut at the end of the month.
Well, correct. And then how bad is it when you really can't stand the person, you want to move out, you want to move on with your life, but you feel financially tied? I had a friend confess that to me. He moved in with his girlfriend. Their rent is $3,000 a month. He can swing it alone, but then he'll be eating ramen noodles or cornbread muffins or whatever the hell you were talking about every day. So you know what he's going to do? He's going to stick it out. He's going to stay with her. He doesn't want to be with her, but he's going to stay with her to keep splitting the rent.
He must be a masochist. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Mary first up in the queue from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Mayor?
Hi, how are you?
I've had better days, Mayor.
Yeah, me too. I was just sealing the driveway, so. I just had to call with the comment. New Jersey, under $30,000 a year. Now, how are you supposed to survive on that?
And who is it? Is it yourself on $30,000?
Well, I was making under $30,000. Now I just, I'm just retiring. My son makes under $30,000. He just started a new job lately, and it's like
is your son living with you at home, or does he have his own pet?
He moved in a few months ago. I mean, I have a house, so might as well live with me.
Well, how were you able to get over the fact that you were just earning a little less than $30,000 over these years?
I'm going to tell you, I scrimp, I save, no vacations, no extras. I basically, go shopping for food and necessities, come back home, and that's it. I don't
nothing
really
extra.
Do very much.
Nothing extra, yeah.
No, nothing extra. And now, the thing they say, New Jersey is supposedly one of the states that makes more money than a lot of other states, but they don't take into consideration the fact that they're looking at people like who live in
West Virginia,
South River, in those things, who are making good high six figures or more, and they add that to the people who are making $20,000, $30,000, and they come up with, New Jersey's getting paid a lot. No, they're not.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Andy, who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here, Andy.
How you doing, Curtis? What's up, Ebony?
What up?
Hey, I'm a 49-year-old construction worker. I've been in the business for 25 years. Union, proud of it. We work very hard. The last 8 years with Obama and the destruction of the middle class that was fought for 100 years, against mobsters, greed, and every other thing, has gone out the window.
That's fine. I won't act like Obama was an economic hero, because he wasn't. But we can't say that started with Obama, because we know that
he went in with
a mess.
I don't blame him entirely at all. Blame the elitist of New York. Bloomberg, in particular, destroyed this middle class. Mm. He said it was going to be a sanctuary city. He was not kidding. The unions went from 70%. These are homeowners from Long Island, not rich people. People that don't get a lot of vacation. We work hard. He turned it into a sanctuary city. The job sites are unsafe. They do the work for $12 an hour. It's just, he said he was going to do it. He did it.
I hope.
And it knocked out the biggest portion of the middle class New York City ever had.
I hope, Ebony, you feel Andy's pain.
I do. I mean, I really do. I can hear it resonating in the tenor of his voice, and it's very real.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
For your midday,
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony, exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
To the phones we go. It's Giuseppe, Joey calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC, Giuseppe.
How you doing, guys?
What up, Joey?
Listen, I'm hearing you talking about New York making $100,000 in the city and life is hard and this and that. Well, I'm in New Jersey. Myself and my wife, we divorced. Well, we remarried 30 years ago.
Wait. You married the same woman again?
No. Oh. The wife I'm with now.
Oh, your second wife. Got it.
Right,
okay.
Second wife, gotcha. Right. Okay. We started 30 years ago with nothing. Mm. We never made over $125,000 a year. We own two pieces of a home in Morris County. We own two pieces of property in Florida, free and clear. And, these people that are in New York making $100,000, well, maybe you shouldn't live there.
I hear you. Maybe you should live in an
area where you could afford to live.
Yeah, the commute can just be hard, though, because what if you absolutely have to work in New York City?
Well, I've had people in my profession traveling from Pennsylvania, maybe 100 miles a day to work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you do what you have to do to make your life better.
Mm.
You can't sit and complain about it, because you got to remember, life is what you make of it.
Yeah, by the way, why don't you just move to Camden, New Jersey, or by the Hudson, Newburgh, New York?
I feel like that about how you feel like going to Harlem Hospital.
Let's go to Brian in Paramus. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Brian?
Hey, guys. 2 points. You said the last growth was in 2004. We probably won't see that again until we hit 2.5%, 3% growth on the GDP, because that would off balance whatever the write-offs are for the companies. And my second point is that anyone that has to work a second job, it should either be tax-free. if they average over 40 hours a week, or that money should have to go into Social Security so that at least they're working to put something away.
I totally agree with your first point. I've made it on the program. Anything you work in addition to your 40 hours a week should be tax-free. You've done your fair share. You've contributed to society's pot. That should be your money, period.
So you want that second income to be tax-free?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Anything over 40 hours, because the whole reason for that is, it will give people incentive to maybe work a second job where they don't have to depend on it because that extra 18 to 33%. But I think it will also take some people that may not work, and it may bring them up another level with just two regular jobs.
Well, let's quickly go, if we can, to Barbara, who's calling from Union, New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Bob. Yes, hello, Barb?
No, she doesn't want to talk to us anymore.
Mm. Barb is unhooked. Hey, Mongolooch there. She's locked in there. Would you look at your disquantificator? Because poor Barb is holding on the line. She's thinking we're playing circle jerk with her. Come on. Come on. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, let's get some news headlines and updates from Ken Duff.
This is Ask Ebony.
Black Barbie dressed in Bugatti.
This is your weekly moment of hashtag truth.
Hashtag bless. Hey, ready for me.
800-848-WABC. And Ask Ebony at WABCRadio.com.
That pedophile on a pedestal, Michael Jackson.
You can do that every week?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, because I despise him. I loathe him, even in death.
Well, he just was the most talented phenom that a generation's ever seen when it comes to music and dance ability. But anyway, I digress. It's 2:30. It's time for Ask Ebony this Friday. And I heard that you've got some really good ones for me today, Curtis. I heard that there's even one that we had a pre-record where a caller was able to call in. And call into the line and record his question beforehand.
That's right. In fact, let's hear from John Hemphill.
Hey, Ebony, I have a question. And my question is, when it comes to a lady like yourself, what are the seven things that you highly value?
Seven. That's a lot. Let me, I'm taking my pen here. First and foremost, if I'm with you, commitment. I have a zero tolerance when it comes to the Playboys. I cannot do it. I will not do it. And
so no Mac Daddies.
No Mac Daddies. And I told my guy up front within a couple of dates, I don't know where this is going. I don't know where I want it to go. I don't know where you want it to go, but I'm going to tell you this. What I don't do is rebuilding trust. Now, it's a lot to be said for it. A lot of people get through infidelity and rebuild and become stronger.
Well, people rebuild motors. They rebuild a chassis.
Understand, and it's a good thing. I just don't do it. I do not do rebuilding of trust. Once you blow your trust with me, it's out the window. Capiche. Don't worry about it.
So it's like you blow a gasket in the car. That's it.
It's like you blew
the
motor.
To the junkyard. Right.
Correct.
To the junkyard.
So commitment, number one. Number two, intellectual stimulation and curiosity. That's very important to me. Number three, community. It's important for me to be with a guy who cares about the world beyond himself. I don't really care about your religious affiliation as long as you're not like a devil worshiper. But I really like a guy that has a community importance and value system.
So a guy whose middle name is Lucifer, you would...
No, that's not going to work.
Okay.
That's not going to work. Somebody that doesn't take himself too seriously, comfortable with his own skin. That's very important to me. That's four. Five, someone that appreciates my value for the right reasons. That's a big one. A lot of guys, you know, they like the trophy girlfriend, the trophy wife, somebody that they can just kind of prop up and feel special about.
When you say your value, we're talking Louis Vuitton, that kind of value?
No, Sliwa. See, that's exactly the kind of stuff I'm not talking about. No, my value as a woman. My value, the best part of me is on the inside, and I need a man that can appreciate that. I don't want to have to point that out to you.
Yeah, but you're like an M&M, hard on the outside, and you're pretending like you're soft on the
inside.
Pretending.
Look at you.
Yeah.
And then number seven, important to me for a guy. Well, frankly, somebody that wants to do the same things in life that I want to do. That was a problem with my ex-husband and I. We nice, very nice guy. At some point, though, we didn't want to do the same thing. So, like to travel, like to enjoy and take in a good show here in Broadway. you know, similar lifestyle pursuits. So those are my seven.
You have an opportunity to call in right now if you have questions for Ebony at 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. But before we take any of your calls, we got to go to the queue because a number of our listeners did submit their questions in advance to askebony at WABCradio.com. That's askebony at WABCradio.com. First up in the queue for this week is Cameron. She goes, "Hi, Ebony. I really love desserts and was wondering, what is your favorite dessert to cook or eat? Thank you, Ebony. You're the best."
First of all, thank you, Curtis Leeward, for that delightful feminine inflection of your voice. That was really
so
cute.
So out of estrogen.
That
I
was really
for
cute.
That, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, thank you, Cameron. You're the best. And I'll give you my favorite dessert to eat. I'm a big chocolate fan. So if you give me a warm chocolate brownie with some walnuts and maybe a little caramel drizzle on top, a la mode with a French vanilla ice cream, that is probably my favorite dessert.
Let's go to Diana Sanchez. Hi, Ebony. What advice do you give to women who are trailblazing in a specific field? Also, how do you deal with not being taken seriously in the workplace? How do we find the perfect balance between being pretty but also smart?
It's like right on cue. You know what it's time for? The book plug.
Okay, here we go.
I got to. I mean, Diana's question.
Move over, Michael Savage, Mark Levin. Here comes Ebony K. Williams' book plug. The name of the book?
Diana Sanchez's question is the reason, in all seriousness, that I wrote this book, right? Because as women, we're constantly told it's either or. Either you're attractive and that's what you're valued by, or you're smart and that's what you're valued by. And then you realize it's not an either or, it's a both. The best power tool is when you are both looked upon in an attractively pleasing way. You ain't got to be the prettiest girl in the room, but you put yourself together well and you harness that power. Because men do care what we look like, and that's just the unfair but true statement. And you're the intellect. You're the power puncher. You're the power climber. If you can combine those two, Diana, then that is why I wrote Pretty Powerful, and you're well on your way to doing any and everything you want in any field that you operate in, whether it's law, politics, business, finance, the classroom, education, nonprofit sector, publishing, fashion, advertising. The world is your oyster.
Feel free, and I love oysters like Casanova. I'll probably have 50 over the weekend.
Disgusting.
Feel free to call in right now. Your question for Ebony, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Here's Sarah. Regarding your wardrobe on Fox that you wear in The Specialist, Monday through Fridays from 5 to 6, are some of the dresses that I see you wearing, are they right off the rack for everyone to choose from, you and your colleagues?
Yeah. So I address this in Pretty Powerful as well, which is on presale, Amazon.com or BarnesandNobles.com right now. Because a lot of people are curious about that. You know, you always got a lot to say about what I have on, what Tim has on, what the different hosts on the show have on, whether we are coordinated color-wise, whether we wear the same color.
Yeah, well, sometimes you clash. Yeah, you divas clash.
And you can't stand it. So what they do to try to avoid that, There are trunk shows that happen twice a year where the employees get to go into a whole big room, look amongst the racks. Sometimes you will see multiple dresses. So you will look up and see Sandra Smith with a dress and say, "Hey, I thought I saw Trish Regan with that same dress." So yes, we have ability to pick the same dresses. But in addition to that, I kind of came to the job with a fully stocked wardrobe of my own personal private collection to make sure that I'm not wearing the same thing as my fellow co-hosts.
Wow. So you actually have a flea market going on there at the Fox News channel.
If you want to call it that. But yeah, a lot.
Where did they get these dresses from? What, off the rack at Lohmann's?
No. Well, I don't know if they're Lohmann's, but a lot of designers, you know, you get a discounted rate or whatever, whatever. But yes, there is a room. And if, let's say I go to work, I'm wearing this white dress. Let's say I go to work tonight and I spill a cup of coffee all over my white dress and I can't, I would panic. There is a room I can go to and just pull another dress from and I can still do my show.
Now, speaking of your book, Paul writes, "Hey, Ebony, I'm out here on the left coast. Are you going to have a book signing in the L.A. area where I can come out and meet and greet you?"
Absolutely, Paul. So we are working on firming up those dates. But what I want you to do, Paul and everyone else listening, go to Facebook and go to Ebony K. Williams fan page. And especially on my fan page, let me tell you, tour dates are about to go up in the next week or two. Giveaways. I'm going to have a couple of free copies of signed autographed first editions. Pretty Powerful. Giving them away for free. If you go and like and become a follower of the Ebony K. Williams fan page, tour dates, including L.A., D.C., Atlanta, probably Chicago, and of course, here in New York City.
Oh, so you have a fan page. How about a faux page? And I don't
they
mean
find them, they,
I don't
find,
mean F A U X.
I know what you mean. They the foes find their, themselves on Twitter, and they trust me, they find me. Don't
got
you
a,
worry about that.
Got a question for Ebony? Call 1-800-848-WABC. First up in the queue, though, is George in Brooklyn. What question you got for Ebony K. Williams, George?
Hey, good afternoon, Curtis and Ebony. Ebony, I think you're fabulous. I just wanted to say that you're a great addition to the WABC family. And my question to you, Ebony, is that what type of man has been the most profound that you've dealt with in your years?
I'm assuming you mean from a romantic lens, George?
Yeah.
The one that I've got now. And I've dated some good men. So to his credit, you know, most of the guys I've dated have been, generally speaking, good guys. But this one's most profound because, A, he's lived a little bit more life. And again, that community impact, that is by far my favorite thing about him. He's someone that has a very generous heart. He sees the world as bigger than him. He sees himself as just somebody who's positioned to make the world better, and he does that. I think a lot of myself, he inspires me to be a better person.
Now, you do realize you're like scoring brownie points, because if this Gavone is listening right now, his heart is all for toots. He's saying, oh, I'm the preferred one. You see, out of all the guys that have been there to sire you.
He's probably working. He's probably working. I don't think he's listening to our show right now.
Yeah, but let's face it. You were scoring brownie points with him, just in case he is listening.
No, you know what it is? It's because I was such a, before him, you know, my best relationship was myself. I encourage all ladies listening right now to ask Ebony, if you're struggling romantically, you can't figure out, I can't meet a good guy, all these relationships seem like dead end. You know what? Fall in love with yourself, ladies. Because seriously, that's what I did. After I got in my marriage, bad relationships, whatever, I said, you know what? I'm going to treat myself the way I wished all these guys would treat me. You know, take myself on trips, take myself out to dinner. And that set the precedent. So it's like, if you don't treat me as good as I treat me, well, to hell with you.
I'm trying to visualize this.
Me courting
love
myself.
Love yourself. Do you actually pleasurize yourself?
No. Yeah. And you know what? Fellas.
Well, you said you love yourself.
We were doing so good today.
If you have a question for Ebony, call 800-848-WABC. Let's go to Ricardo calling from Mount Vernon. What's your question for Ebony K. Williams, Ricardo?
It's not a question. It's a statement that I'd be the worst person in the world for Ebony.
Why?
I've been womanizing my whole life. I have children out of wedlock. I have serious commitment problems. I got about 25 chicks on the hook now.
25?
I'm out here earning and burning and steady earning Mount Vernon. And we're doing the right thing up here with all the women, and they seem to be okay with it. It's a different generation out there, baby.
25, Ricardo? Maybe like two or three.
No, I slowed down. I'm in my 60s now.
Now, let me ask you a question, Ricardo. Do you walk around with a pocket full of Viagra?
Need it, brother. I'm Italian.
Oh, wait a second. An old Italian, right? A stallion from Mount Vernon.
Oh, my God.
Broccoli Rob is my Viagra.
Yep. Broccoli Rob. You know what Italians used to do in Mount Vernon? You know what business they were into?
I'm like dumbfounded right now. I am shocked.
Laying down asphalt. They would pave the roads.
That
Italians
man said he had
Vernon.
25 women on the side. How many? What is the most number of women you've juggled successfully at one time? Oh. And it's okay, because, you know, if you're dating, you're dating. So, but you're not exclusive. You're just dating. How many can you handle at one time on your dating roster?
In my prime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was many moons. Eight?
Yep.
You can date eight women at one time.
I handled eight.
And keep their names straight, their jobs straight.
No, you always mess up.
Mm-hmm.
You always mess up. You always get caught.
That's why I say successful.
You always get caught juggling.
If I'm a guy and I was living that kind of life, I would try no more than three. After three, you're going to get messed up.
I would suggest that eight is way too much.
Yeah, eight is way too much.
And what's his name from Mount Vernon?
25. What?
He's got to have a pocket full of Viagra.
And he can't have a job. Because you can't go to work.
I don't care what kind of Italian stallion he is. Man, that is a lot of productivity. 1-800-848-WABC if you have a question for Ebony K. Williams. You can also go online to Ask Ebony at WABCradio.com. Oh, I got two questions for you, Ebony K. Williams. Number one, where are you going to be comping a squad to watch McGregor versus Mayweather?
I'll be in your favorite town in New Jersey.
You're kidding.
What? Pike party.
You're not going to be in Harlem, USA, cheering on the brother Mayweather, huh?
What is this? No, I'm going to be in Rumson, New Jersey, at a fight party.
with the one percenters there? Oh, my
God. With the good American people.
Well, that's
going to
be a great fight crowd. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
the Wasps.
God.
Oh, isn't it so barbaric how the Irish guy hits the black guy?
No.
And by the way, who's going to win?
Mayweather. I told you Mayweather. It's going to be a snooze fest. I think it's going to be a big hype machine. You know, this fight comes on so late on the East Coast. It's going to be almost midnight. I'm going to be half awake because, you know, I'm a grandma, I'm a millennial, and I'll be damn near asleep. But when the points go on the board and everything's counted and tabulated, Floyd Mayweather will be the victor.
How many rounds will...
It'll be a long fight. Long fight. They're going to milk this. Because Mayweather, like, you can barely touch him because he's a very good defensive boxer. I don't enjoy watching him. I don't particularly like his persona, but he's very good at avoiding being hit.
I think McGregor's going to have the luck of the leprechaun. He's going to throw a punch out of nowhere.
What is this, Coming to America?
That hits Mayweather right on his jaw. He falls on his keister. He gets counted out. The place goes crazy. And then that sets up the return match.
You've been smoking bud before you came in here today?
There's a lot of money at stake here.
I wouldn't doubt
that Mayweather may take a dive on this just for another $200 million payday.
Sounds like you've been cheating over there before.
Think about that. He's got a lot of baby mamas to support.
He's got plenty of cash, though.